Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.
Good evening and welcome to the iOS show on the British Tech Network. I'm Paul Wheatley and I have the same usual suspects as we always have because, you know, I have sent out invites to other people, but I think they've listened to the podcast, which is maybe... we should do something about hiding the podcast from iTunes before we invite people on this show. Not that I'm complaining, because we have a fine cast. The first one being Roddy. How are you this evening?
I'm not a suspect, Paul.
Right.
Saying I'm a usual suspect, the police have excluded me from their inquiries now, for that case at least. I just want that to be clear. My solicitor made it very clear he wants me to say that.
Well, that's good to hear. I'm glad about that.
Otherwise, Paul, I'm dandy. Thank you.
Superb, superb. Have you finished your double-decker?
I've eaten almost all of my double-decker, and I'm going to eat the rest of it at a surprise point during the recording of the podcast.
Superb, superb. Ian, how are you this evening, sir?
I'm great, thanks, Paul. I'm wondering, Roddy, will you be offering a prize for anyone who can guess when that double-decker consumption goes on?
Yes.
Fantastic. Let's not work out what the prize is just yet.
It's probably best not to. It would take a while after eat the double-decker anyway.
And finally, we have Robert. Are you still with us, Robert?
I believe I still am.
That's great. Should you just explain quickly why there's the possibility that you may not be with us at sections of this show tonight?
Ah, yes. There might be some screaming-type situations going on with a small child, which shortly after the previous episode came into this world. So, I might have to go take care of that.
No problem. Well, so if at any point you drop off, that's the reason why.
Or alternatively, he could drop off because he wants to share my double-decker.
It's very true. From
double-decker.
Very true, very true. Anyway, leaving that one beside, we haven't got any follow-up this week, which I'm a little bit sad about, frankly. People out there... please send us something. I don't know, used socks, pictures of your cat. I don't care. Just if people could send us something so we could have something in this section to kind of make it worthwhile that it's in the Google Doc, please.
Would it be unprofessional of us to just make some up?
It wouldn't be if you hadn't just mentioned it, because now even if we get follow-up next week, people are going to assume that we are just making it up.
I've got one here in my imagination from Mrs. Brenda Smith, who said that we were perfectly satisfactory.
Very good. Thank you, Brenda.
I'd like to commend you, Roddy, on your transparency there.
I think I'm open and honest.
Superb. Skipping over that section there and into the news. Probably the biggest thing this week isn't exactly an Apple story. It's more of a Google story, but due to the fact it's dealing with items that currently run, or competing rather with items that currently run iOS, it's probably relevant to talk about here. So the first thing is at Google I.O. last week, Google announced the Android Nexus. Which is not called the Android Nexus 7, it's just called the Nexus 7. It just happens to run Android, is that right?
So it's the Google Android Nexus 7 tablet thing.
Yes, it's
except it's not. It's just the Nexus 7.
I believe it's the Nexus 7. Yes, although it is running Jelly Bean 4.1, as far as I understand.
So it's the Google Android Jelly Bean 4.1 Nexus 7 tablet.
Yeah, 7 inch.
That's the whole name, I think. Yeah,
it's a 7 inch as well. So you have to add that in too.
By Asus.
By Asus, yeah. I was listening to another podcast earlier on the week, and somebody says, "So is this tablet built by Asus, and I have to. I have to admit, I really thought both of those were the same company and just different pronunciations. Am I being really stupid here, or are they the same company?
I thought they were called Asus.
Yeah, I've heard different pronunciations, but, you know, I'm not from there, so...
You're not from there.
It could be Asus.
It could be.
I'm just saying.
Asus. Anyway, they kind of inferred that it was a different company. Back to the topic at
hand. I think it's interesting that I'm going to call them Asus, who are building it.
I'm going to call them Asus.
You carry on.
Right.
I think we've covered that. There won't be any confusion around it. But ASUS didn't really have much of a presence in the Android space up until now. And they are obviously a huge manufacturer. They've been doing very interesting things with things like Ultrabooks on the kind of Intel and Windows side. And this gives them a bit of a foothold in Android as well. So they must be quite happy to have the scoop, especially given that Google have already bought Motorola, and Motorola could probably have built this if Google had wanted them to. And Samsung probably would have been happy to build it as well. So ASUS probably very happy to be the chosen manufacturer for this, because it looks... Sorry?
I was going to say, did they? I thought they made the Transformer.
Oh, sorry. Yes, they do. But
so they don't make tablets apart from the tablets that they already make that have actually been quite successful.
Yes, but I think the Transformer hasn't had quite such a big market opportunity, I think, as this Nexus will have. I think whenever you're building the Google OEM own brand stuff, there's a certain subset of consumers that will always go for it because they want the pure Google kind of experience. So I think ASUS are probably quite happy to be the favoured partner here.
Yeah, I think so. I actually think it's quite interesting. I like it. We were discussing this actually in the big show on Thursday night, and there was a big question mark over who is this firing at. And there was a big question about is it to compete with the Kindle Fire? Is it to compete with the iPad? Is it just to be a cheap tablet? And my thought was, and I don't know if Google are necessarily firing it at this market, but this makes complete sense to me when you think about the kiddie market. Mm-hmm. So like the kind of the 12 and below, because in this device you have a book reader, a device that will play games, it will play movies and TV shows. It's about the same price, assuming that the conversion rate works and it doesn't just come out of £199 to $199.
No, it's 159 in the UK.
It's 159. So it's slightly more expensive than a Nintendo DS or a PS Vita. But I just kind of think that fits really, really nicely. It's the price point, and I think it covers all the bases that a child's device of this type would hit.
I agree. Yeah. But I think it's also, because it is so well priced, it's obviously a much more capable device than, say, the Kindle Fire, which is similar form factor, similar price. It's got the latest NVIDIA processors in it. The Kindle Fire is a much more stripped down device. So I think purely from the amount of stuff they've stuffed into it for the price, if that's not too many stuffs in one sentence, I think it looks very good value. I mean, I very nearly kind of ordered one as soon as it came onto the shop. I just thought £159, 7-inch tablet. Well, even if I don't use it, it's not terrible value, you know. Yeah. I'll probably, you know, I get one as a kind of, I see what it's like as much as anything else.
Yeah, it's not a bad sub iPad proposition, because the Kindle Fire is getting slated for having really bad, slated wasn't a pun on slate or tablet, by the way, but it is now that I've mentioned it. So the Fire's got crap hardware, and of course it's Amazon's own branch of Google, so it's probably going to have limited support. The rather interesting looking £149 7-inch tablet I saw in the window of Maplin yesterday, which was made by some unknown manufacturer and did promise that it runs ice cream, but will never ever be upgraded to Jelly Bean. I suppose if you get this little tablet, it is cheap, it's disposable, and hopefully you're more guaranteed an upgrade pass to the next version of Android than you would be with another third party.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm guarantee that it isn't a piece of junk literally after like a few months, at least hopefully.
Yeah,
they have been somewhat upgrading their own like OEM phones at least for a while, so.
Yeah, I think you've got a fair point there with it being a kind of a Google branded thing. There's a reasonable chance that they will actually keep on top of it. They also announced, and I thought this was after having seen that, and I was actually reasonably interested. I have to admit, Ian, I was in the same boat as you, and kind of tempted if it wasn't for the fact I had a sodding wedding coming up at the end of the year, and I would have been ejected from the house had I arrived home with another tablet. I probably would have jumped at it as well. But they actually kind of started Google I/O kind of looking a little bit interesting, Google Glasses aside, because I'm not going to cover that because that's a whole podcast in itself almost. But they then produced this orb.
Call it what it is. It's a ball, Paul.
the Nexus Q.
It's Google's little shiny thingy. Mm.
I just don't get this. I'm sorry. There's nothing about this that makes sense to me.
Well, it's an Apple TV that's round and doesn't do anything.
And it's three times the cost.
Yeah. And it's still there in the US. The sort of premier consumer market, the aspirational lifestyle.
Yeah, it's aimed more at the kind of Sonos devices than Apple's device because it has the built-in amplifier, so you just plug your speakers in and it does its thing.
But why would you go with this instead of a Sonos due to the fact that Sonos can connect into iTunes and the Google Play Store, whereas this will only connect in the Google Play Store?
I've never used a Sonos, Paul, so I don't know how it compares. But I guess, you know, you go for it because it has the better integration with the Android ecosystem. So, you know, potentially there might be apps that you can run on it that you can't run on a Sonos or whatever else. But, yeah, I agree. It seems like a strange price for what it is and a strange spec for what it is. But the other interesting fact about it is that, of course, it's going to be made in the US, which probably doesn't help its price any.
Mm-hmm. And then it'll fall apart.
We don't know that.
Famous American build quality.
That's not going to help our iTunes reviews in the American store.
Oh, well. I'm also not entirely convinced about it. I'm slightly worried about it. I like Google being the internet, and even then I only tolerate them. But the idea about bringing Google into my living room seems like a step too far, and then Google will be in my bathroom using my nail scissors and stuff like that. I don't want to open the floodgates to that kind of thing.
I mean, the biggest thing that kind of struck me as a really odd thing is that the little pulsing row of LEDs right around the middle of it. I have a theory about that. Could it be that that little pulsing row of LEDs is actually sending out some kind of signal that just is almost like subliminal advertising? So Google it already has kind of the internet advertising space completely sewn up. Is this the start of the kind of the a la Futurama subliminal advertising? It's going to start actually transmitting advertising into your dreams and things like that.
So you're on the sofa catching up with Coronation Street and suddenly get a strange urge from out of nowhere to buy a double-decker.
Exactly.
I think it's already happening.
No, I wouldn't put it past Google, really. I just wouldn't. They probably thought about it.
I think they were the first to do it.
It's like one of those things from Prometheus which scans the room.
Yes. Yeah, actually. I never thought
and,
of that.
And we're back to Roddy naked on Google Street View again.
I didn't do anything. I was a victim of circumstance.
So moving on swiftly and kind of back.
If I can just jump briefly back to the Nexus 7 very quickly. The other thing that I found interesting about this introduction is the kind of comparison between this and Microsoft's tablet introduction and the way kind of Apple does its stuff, because Microsoft are finally kind of not given up exactly, but they like Apple, are now making their own stuff. And Google are still partnering with hardware manufacturers to build their stuff. So while they're Google branded, they still haven't kind of taken on that manufacturing capability. So I wonder if that's something they're toying with. I mean, the Nexus Q, I don't think they mentioned a hardware partner. I think they just said, we're building this. So it's perhaps a sign that they're moving in that direction as well. They want to kind of own the whole stack.
It's very difficult for these organizations, though, so your Googles and your Microsofts. It's all fair and well for Apple because they've been doing it for years and everybody expects that.
Oh, yes. But this was the most interesting thing for me about the Surface introduction was Microsoft turning around and saying, we've got to do hardware if we're going to do this right kind of thing. It's not enough to be a software company or a hardware company anymore. You've got to have a broader expertise and you've got to be good at it because goodness knows Google are going to be subsidizing these things, you know, probably to the tune of $100 each potentially. The bill of materials is definitely more than $200 for that tablet. I was a little disappointed that there wasn't more innovation on the hardware side, but you know, given that it's targeted at that price, they can't really afford to put much in. And I think, as we said, for the cost, it's very good value.
Yeah.
Very quickly on a slightly related note, we were talking about the Surface and you know other manufacturing partners. I read today that Hewlett Packard or HP, whatever they're called now, that lot have scrapped plans to actually build Windows RT tablets. So obviously they've got the hump off of Microsoft building their own tablets. So they're saying no Windows for you on our tablets. Not that they actually make any anymore, but interesting that people are already sort of turning around and going, no Microsoft, stuff you.
Just Windows RT is that, or just are they still building tablets?
I don't know. Shall we ask?
Probably just Windows tablets.
Shall I write them a letter?
Yeah, you do that. You do that. Because I was thinking, you know, if they, their core competency is PCs, so if they don't want to build ARM devices because they don't want to build ARM devices, that's fair enough.
I've used an HP PC. I can guarantee you that's not their core competence.
Well, what are they better at than that?
They make really
good at hiring bad people to be their CEOs.
Yep, making enormous acquisitions.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And they make some fantastic beans. Oh, no, that's Heinz. No, they make brown sauce. They make brown sauce.
And barbecue sauce.
But the brown and barbecue sauce won't run Windows RT. So.
We have
you
a show
don't know that.
That's just probably fine. About the point where we move on. Is.
Oh, right, okay.
I'll do the thing you do where you move it on.
I'm having a note down that show title really quickly. Moving from Google Chrome slightly more into what we actually have this podcast for. We're already 15 minutes in, but never mind. So Google Chrome has released on iOS this week. In fact, I believe it was yesterday. Have you guys tried this yet?
No, because it looks rubbish, because it's just the same WebKit browser, really, that Safari's running, but it looks like Chrome. So I'm not sure if I see the point.
Well, I would have agreed with you, but I thought just for the interests of us talking about it tonight, I will download and install it on both my iPhone and my iPad. And I'm pleasantly surprised. Overall performance is the same because it is essentially the WebKit browser. I still have my reservations for the same reason that I didn't like Sparrow, in that you can't set it as your default.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's actually got a really nice interface. Robert has now left us to deal with an issue.
Something.
Yes.
Yes.
A backdoor emergency.
I've lost my train of thought now.
Something about Chrome.
Yeah, but it's got a really nice interface. It has the conjoined search and address bar, so you can put a search into one box, because that's something that kind of annoyed me about Safari. It's got a really nice voice recognition search function, which we will get onto in a second, which I actually find better than Siri, because I did a couple of side-by-side tests. And it works substantially better, even though I've been talking into Siri for, I don't know, 6 months, 7 months now since the iPhone came out. It's got a really nice way of showing you all the different tabs you've got open. In Safari, it's that thing where you have to swipe across and it's kind of that page view, whereas in Chrome, it kind of stacks them one above the other.
Okay.
I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, on the iPhone, at least. On the iPad, you could just see the tabs.
Sorry, yes, you're quite right. Sorry, on the iPhone, it does that. I was pleasantly surprised. I mean, overall, if it's still running WebKit, it's not going to be much of a different experience when it comes to load times and things like that. But
well, yes and no. I've tried it as well, Paul, and I like you. I like some of the touches. Mm-hmm. I think it does some interesting things with the interface. I really like the fact that, for example, you can swipe to move between tabs on both versions. And because it's Chrome, obviously it does the thing with Chrome Sync, so you can sync your bookmarks and your tabs and all that other kind of stuff through Google's cloud. Mm-hmm. So if you're a Chrome user, it's a really good option. Obviously, it is limited because you can't make the default browser. But the one limitation it does have is that it's using a regular WebKit view to render web pages. And you may have heard that there's a special subclass of WebKit views that Apple only lets Safari on iOS have, which uses a different JavaScript engine. So Safari has much faster JavaScript on iOS devices than anything else that uses a WebKit view. And if memory serves, it's because of sandboxing and so forth. They can make it faster because they don't have to be quite so secure with their own browser. But Chrome can't do that, so it's not as quick as Safari would be. But it does enough interesting stuff, I think, that it's definitely worth checking out.
Yeah.
I just installed it here, and on a side note, it looks okay. I like the fact that it allowed me to skip putting in a Google account, because you know how angry I get about that. But I just typed in Paul Wheatley in the bar, and it auto-completed to Paul Wheatley Lush. So, you know, I'll let our audience judge from that what they...
Oh, dear. Right, okay. Yeah, fine. On the whole voice recognition thing. Have you tried, Ian? Have you tried the voice recognition, the little microphone?
I haven't. No, I was in a busy office today, so I didn't get a chance.
Right. Well, I made a test. I did a test earlier on. I just assumed, to be honest, it would just be linking it to Siri in some kind of weird hijacking of the API that connects through the keyboard. But it's not. It's a different interface, and it seems to react slightly differently. So, for example, here I'm just going to do a live test here. Hopefully, this will work. So if I do a live test, and what will I search for?
Apes bottoms.
Apes double-deckers.
Double-deckers, yeah.
Right, okay.
Double-decker calories, that's a good one.
Right, Google, well, actually it's kind of failed after me just saying that, but Google little microphone thing has searched for IPS bottoms, whatever that happens to be. Apes bottoms.
Silence. It's so exciting.
And no, actually, Siri has searched for its bottoms. So,
it's useless.
Both of them.
I'm going to try here. Double decker. Right. Oh, double decker chocolate bar. Yay. Wikipedia, the free. Oh, this is great.
Which one was that? Was that the Chrome?
It continues, is a brand of chocolate bar currently manufactured by Cadbury, first introduced in 1976, so it's the same age as me, and you'd think it would have gone off. that's just in the little Chrome browser.
Right,
just
try the Siri one now.
I don't have Siri.
Oh, you have Siri on your iPad, surely, do you not?
No.
Do you have an iPad 3?
No, some of us just have iPad 2s, you know.
Come on, you're a financial service contractor. You should be able to get an iPad 3.
Yeah, so I'll deny everything. Maybe I spend my money on other pursuits. Gentlemanly pursuits.
So I ask, guys, because I've not tried it, does it kind of take a second or two to kind of come back with the results? Does it
It does a little working thing, but it's really quick.
Yeah, because that was the interesting thing about... you can carry on searching if you want, but the interesting thing about the Google I.O. demo was the voice recognition they demonstrated in Jelly Bean, which was definitely built into the device. You could see it actually... putting words up on the screen as they were doing it, and then it would actually go back and revise some of them using a bit of natural language processing.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it was. It was. And it was very, very quick.
I'm going to try another one here while you do that.
I have to say the search thing there was
Ian
a lot
McKay
quicker.
Ian McKay naked.
Oh, God. I hope that doesn't come up with anything.
The search on Chrome there was...
Oh, if you could see what I could see.
Put them in the show notes. Put it in the show notes.
The first three results, which are all the same, are Ian McKay, it must be crying, naked, happy.
Right.
I'm going to search for that one.
I actually thought that the Google search there was substantially better than what the Siri was doing, considering that, in theory, Siri has learnt my voice over time, whereas that Google one I literally just installed this afternoon. So I was quite impressed with that. I mean, that was another article that we had on Mac Rumors that we were going to talk about, which is Siri shows increasing promise, but accuracy falls short of Google text searches. And I have to say, I agree on, albeit not a huge amount of testing, but just on a little bit of testing today. But I on the whole, I like Chrome. It has replaced Safari, at least for a small test period, in my dock on both my iPad and my iPhone. So I'm going to have a shot for a week and see if I can live in Chrome and see what happens.
This is also something of a strategic move by Google, because the other thing that they mentioned in the Android 4.1 announcement was that they're now putting Chrome on Android as a standard browser, whereas previously it was just called Android Browser or something
Okay. So it's a branding thing.
So the official Android browser is now Chrome. I think, you know, this is possibly a thing to woo switchers. You know, oh, you've got Chrome on the iPhone, or you can have it on your Android phone as well. You know, just make it more consistent across platforms.
Well, I use Chrome on my Macs at home and on my PC at work. And if it's now on my iPhone, my iPad, I'm happy. I far prefer Chrome over all the other browsers that are available.
Okay. See, I've always been quite happy with Safari, but they are, I mean, for the most part, they're using the same, like, they are all using WebKit in the background, but it's the little touches, I guess, isn't it? I think I just like to have something that is integrated. It's that, you know, being able to use all the share sheets and things like that and have them open native applications. Or does Chrome do that on the iPhone?
No, you can't set it as the default, so it doesn't open. I mean, like, if I touched on a link in...
I'm just trying that now, so I can copy the link URL, but I can't send it to mail or...
No. You can't. If you tap on a link in email or something like that, it will open up Safari again, which is the same thing as I mentioned a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about Sparrow. It's the same problem. You can't set different things as different different defaults. Actually, that reminds me, we did get some feedback this week from Peter. He tweeted...
You're just making this up, aren't you?
No, I'm not. He's actually, we can prove this, because there was a comment on our show on the British Tech Network site. If I can find it. So there was actually something, and it was relating to this as well, so I'm not just kind of throwing something in here. It was from a chap named Peter Emery, so thanks, Peter, for your comment. Just a comment, read DuckDuckGo searches on iOS devices. It's one of the search options in the iCab mobile browser. Download that and you have access to... Oh, sorry, no, this isn't relating to this. This is if you download the iCab mobile browser, you can then set DuckDuckGo as your default search. So it's not quite changing your default browser. It's changing your default search engine in your default browser.
And man, am I loving that DuckDuckGo.
Do you enjoy DuckDuckGo? So we've got off on a wild tangent tonight.
Are you going to say something about getting back on track now?
Yes, I am.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I am. So
I'm not doing my job tonight. Sorry, I apologise. We will move on very swiftly into the leaked iOS update hints at Apple TV apps. So this is basically, it was an article on the interwebs. I'm padding now because I can't find the actual URL because I just closed the tab. But basically, it was a leaked iOS 6 update for Apple TV. And again, it's suggesting apps. Now, we already have had a leaked iOS in the past that suggested that we were going to get keyboard controls. And as far as I'm aware, that never arrived, other than the fact you can use your keyboard in the remote app on the iPhone. Am I right there?
No one knows.
I don't know.
I didn't think you could. I know you can use the keyboard in the remote app, but I didn't think you could actually use the link up like a Bluetooth keyboard or something like that. But this is now saying that there's apps.
I don't think you can.
No. The biggest thing that I like about this, because to be honest, everything that I want to do on my TV screen, I can use AirPlay on my iPad. Mm-hmm. But the suggestion of it bringing apps means that I can maybe get rid of some of the crap that they've added for me. Because, and I'm sure there's people out there that want the MLB channel, and good luck to you, frankly. But I don't want it cluttering up the home screen of my Apple TV. Bottom line.
It's a bit odd that they've... I didn't like the new updated interface for a little bit, but it's growing on me. But like you say, just having all this rubbish all over the place. Like, if I'm not signed up to Netflix, I don't want Netflix there.
Yeah. I want Love Film there, from my point of view, but that's... I don't know why...
I'm not going to tell you what I want there. Gloria Estefan, obviously.
I want Love Film there instead of Netflix. But it's these kind of things. I want BBC iPlayer there. Now, I know I can run it on my iPad. And I would go out on a limb here and say that the majority of people that have Apple TVs also have some kind of other iOS device, such as an iPod Touch, an iPad, or an iPhone. At the very least, they've got a Mac or something like that. Like, it's highly unlikely you would buy an Apple TV and have an Android phone. But I want BBC iPlayer on there. I want Sky Go. I want all those kind of things on there so that I have quick and easy access to that kind of stuff. So I would love this to happen, but
given that Microsoft now has iPlayer available on Xbox dashboard, and 4OD and all those other kind of things, you think, well, surely if they can get it together, then Apple should be able to as well.
And Apple being the ones who've initially gone out and made all these, contracts with the movie studios and things like that, you'd think if they can conquer Hollywood, they could conquer the BBC. Who are streaming the iPlayer left, right, and center. You never know, it could happen.
So hopefully that'll come along. So the next one, Apple chomps at App Store search. Developers see shift in search results. This was highlighted by a chap who runs the best car parking app. And basically what it is Apple appear to have used the chomp acquisition from a few months back to benefit their search engine within the App Store. This can only be a good thing, surely.
Thank heavens, I say.
They seem to be prioritizing different things in the relevance. So when you the story says when you search for best parking, it used to have things with best parking in the name, and now it's kind of coming up with more relevant stuff and less kind of basic search stuff. But they seem to have been doing a lot of playing, because since I originally put the article in the notes, there's another one from kind of 3 or 4 days later that says they've changed it again. So it seems to be something they're actively working on, is these rankings based on search.
Mm-hmm. No, it's all good.
I personally think this is, yeah, I think that I wrote a short blog article when the Mac App Store launched, because the search was so terrible. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you search for something and you get like an icon and its name and its category, and you have no idea just looking at it whether that's the thing you want or not. So, and I was just trying to search for things that I thought people might search for. It's true on iOS as well, but iOS has far more apps than the Mac App Store, so it's even worse in many ways. And actually trying to find something that's relevant to what you need and is useful and, you know, is well reviewed is quite difficult.
Yes, I'm in complete agreement, Ian.
I mean, that has been the major problem of the App Store ever since they launched it, basically. I mean, discoverability, and like, even if you know what kind of app you're, a specific app that you really want to find, just by name, it's been sometimes nigh impossible to find it just because of the 5 billion different apps with a similar name.
And they're all called Real Boobs HD.
Well, yeah, no, you can just take a photo and you wobble it and, yeah.
We've invented a new app, well done.
Wow.
Isn't this not necessarily a good thing when you consider how deep and vast the App Store is? And the article suggests that it's on TechCrunch, actually, the article, and it suggests that it's also going to go on downloads and reviews. Now, if you're a brand new app that's just appeared, and for whatever reason you just haven't got your crap together instantly, you've kind of got to make a big splash in that first couple of weeks to get your ratings and your downloads up there. Otherwise, it's been a complete waste of time, surely. So, you know, this kind of, it's a double-edged sword, this one, surely.
Yeah.
Is that all we have to say?
You're really provoking discussion here, Paul.
Well, yeah, I think the downloads and ratings thing is very important, obviously, but I think what they really need is something that's, you know, all kinds of companies will look at, which is some sort of social angle on the search. So it says your friends like this or something like this. And, you know, potentially the Facebook integration, yeah, would be a good way to do that. Not that I trust most of my friends when it comes to recommending apps, but that's a whole other story.
It could be tied in to Find My Friends as well, so that you can see what apps your friends are using and where they are. It would make it easier to follow them and know if they're about to try and call the police if they've got the phone app open.
So stalk my friends, yeah, and see what they're using.
Oh, yeah,
that's pretty nice.
No, it's just weird, isn't it?
Pretty much.
And finally, this evening, on the news section, it's quite sad. I think we should almost have a moment's silence if there hadn't already been quite a few awkward silences in the show already. for the closure of MobileMe. MobileMe passed away. Well, it's 3 days away just now. It'll be possibly 4 or 5 days away since when this comes out. But very sad, MobileMe to go.
A moment's sigh of relief, surely. It was never that great.
Even Steve said so.
I don't know. I mean, it wasn't great, but was it not the best that we had for a while? And I know
it
Google
was better
out
than Mac.com.
It definitely was. Yes.
It was better than being repeatedly punched in the face. Only
it was slightly better than eWorld, I think.
eWorld.
Oh, Earth is eWorld. Is this one of your weird foreign things again?
No. Never mind.
No, tell me. I need to know now.
It was this weird old service that Apple had back in like the mid-90s, I think. No, yeah. Pre-Steve Jobs returning.
Oh, I don't remember.
It was a horrible mistake. Didn't go well at all.
Was it Mac.com that was iTools before that? Is that right?
Yeah, and that was some kind of evolution of eWorld or something or another.
It sounds great because it could be E for email or E for electronic.
Or E for eclectic.
E for eclectic. Let's think of some other words beginning with E. Or shall we just move on to the closure of MobileMe?
We'd better move on before you get to
MobileMe has an E at the end of it.
Right, okay.
So I quite liked MobileMe. I liked it. It didn't do very much, but what it did very well. And I got quite annoyed when I tried to migrate to iCloud and I used the wrong address and I lost all my benefits and things. So I then ended up having like 3 different Apple IDs that I couldn't integrate anymore. And that was very upsetting.
Oh, that's a good point. I'll get rid of. Does that mean my other Apple ID will die then?
I think it will. Yeah.
No, I think your email addresses are dying though. It's just the content that you've stored in MobileMe.
I want it to die.
No, I don't believe your email addresses are going to go. Because no, I haven't seen anybody with a billybunter@icloud.com. That was the first thing that came out of my head.
Because you had to have the address in order to migrate to iCloud, didn't you?
But yeah. This is one I haven't migrated to iCloud.
So. No, I know. I don't.
Yeah, but I think it's still become an iCloud address, even though it's not your main iCloud account.
Oh, I see.
So tough.
Oh, great. So it will never die.
No,
it'll probably still work with mac.com as well, just because.
I would imagine so. But you can still get your data off of it. I think iDisk data, I don't remember the time period, but there was the article, certainly in MacRumors, kind of suggested that it hadn't all just, somebody hadn't just wandered along and pulled the plug out in the MobileMe server. You still had some time, albeit they had told you to get your stuff off by the end of June. However, mm-hmm. I would highly recommend that if you still have stuff on there and you can still get to it, get it off as soon as humanly possible, because it is going to go.
And if you're using iDisk in the first place, there's something wrong with you.
Well, that is very true.
It was never good. I thought at first, way before Dropbox, wow, iDisk looks amazing. And after one attempt at using it, I just thought, this is not what I want. This isn't making me happy.
It wasn't. I found a few uses for it. My biggest problem was, every now and again, randomly, my iDisk would just appear as a package on my desktop, like a compressed file, just randomly. I'd just fire up my machine one day, and I would still have my disk drive, but there'd be nothing in it. And then there would just be this package that had kind of it looked like the iDisk icon, but there was, I can't remember, off the top of my head, there was something slightly different about it. I don't know if it was a different color or something. And it was almost like a zip file, a compressed file. I just randomly did that. But then, of course, that then took up 10 gig on my hard drive, because iDisk was 10 gig. Anyway, sorry, that's... My funny little ennui.
Thanks for sharing.
Very briefly, I think Apple is much better at introducing things than killing things off. They don't do it in a very structured fashion. I opened up Aperture the other day, and it said, "Oh, there's a problem logging into your MobileMe account." I was like, "Well, yes, probably, but why are you still trying? Do you not know, like the rest of the world, that this is now a dead thing and you can't use it anymore?"
Actually, my Apple TV, when I was on it like last night or something, still had Mobile Me as a gigantic tile beside MLB and Netflix.
The amount of things that these services get integrated into is mind-boggling, but then when the services get killed off, there doesn't seem to be the kind of follow-through to update all the bits of software to coordinate all that. It's not like they haven't known it's going to die for some time now, so I'm a little kind of irritated that, we've still got this kind of Mobile Me hangover and all these lines of code that we can't do anything with anymore.
Mm-hmm. It's a shame.
Mobile Me is Emailabob backwards.
Email. You are a sage, a wise
just,
man.
Just pointing that out.
Last thing on this, if you have an iWeb account, and I honestly don't know if this is still available or not, as in I don't know if you can still get to your iWeb account, but if you manage to download your iWeb account and you have a website and you want to do something with it, Don McAllister on the Mac show on Friday past was on the show, and he has actually made his screencast online video. It's about 45 minutes long, and it basically explains how you can take your iWeb website and pop it up onto UK2, and so it goes through all the tools and everything like that, so and opening your account on UK2. And if you listen after the support stocking section, which is coming on to next, we'll give you some voucher codes so you can buy some stuff on UK2. Use Don McAllister's free video. It's screencastonline.com/mac/show/0345. We'll put the link in the show notes, and that will explain to you how to do it. Now, when you actually go in there, it sort of looks like you're just going to get a trailer, but it is actually the full show. He just put it up purely for listeners of the British Tech Network, so that's very kind of him. If you want to head over there, Screencast Online is actually a really good resource if you can do subscriptions and see all sorts of groovy videos and stuff from him.
Sorry, Paul, what was the name of that hosting provider you mentioned?
It was UK2.
UK2, okay, I'll note that down.
Yes, I'm going to be mentioning them later. They've got some voucher codes because they're
please
very
do
good for the network. I will do. But we're going to do support stockings first. Nobody suggests...
I've got a new name for it.
Oh, okay.
Trouble Gusset.
I'm not sure I like the way this is escalating.
Oh dear, right.
Do we need to start censoring this in a few episodes? I'm starting to worry a bit.
As it gets further...
if there are any other suggestions, I'm all ears.
Right, okay. So
please send us some suggestions. Please.
Or I'm going to keep coming out with these. They'll get worse and worse. So, You'll beg me to change it, I tell you.
Support stockings. First one, I'm just going to push straight on it. How do you get the Thumbs keyboard on an iPad? That's from Donald Moore. Thank you very much for asking this question, Donald. So how do you go about getting the Thumbs keyboard on an iPad?
Well, you just use your thumbs. Or how do you display it?
I think so. I think that's what the question is.
Well, you have to go to the little bit at the bottom right, don't you, where it's the little keyboard icon beside the question mark 123. It's to the right of that, or it's below the shift key, isn't it?
Yes. It's bottom right-hand corner. It does look like a keyboard with a down-pointing arrow in front of it. And it kind of looks like it's got four lines on it that almost look like they're grips. Is this available? This was an iOS change, not a hardware change, wasn't it? So you should get this on iPad 1, 2, 3.
There are a couple of things you can do. Firstly, you do need to make sure it's switched on in your preferences. There's a preference under general and then keyboard in the preferences.
This is why I was just trying to do it now, and it's still working.
Yeah, so if you're under general, there's a keyboard setting, and there's a split keyboard, which can be on or off. So that's if it's off, you can't do it. But then when you go into the keyboard, you can either do the thing with the keyboard button on the bottom right where you can undock it or you can split it. Or if you just take your thumbs and you put them on the keyboard and you pull it from the middle to the edges, it will actually just split out like that.
No.
So you can, just try, try
I just said that. I didn't know that did that. That's awesome.
I've just broken my keyboard in half.
So you can just that I find is by far the easiest way to change it when you're in the middle of stuff.
That's very
nice.
I didn't know that did that. And I'm also told, if you tap to the space just to the right of the T or the left of the Y, you will get T's and Y's.
Hey.
So, like, if you see if the keyboard's split, and you tap just to the left of the Y, so where the T might be, it continues to type a T, even though the button's actually kind of 4 or 5 inches across on the left.
Someone's put some thought into that.
Yes, I know. Anyway, sorry. So there you go.
I've just done a weird thing though. On that button, it has two options on the keyboard. It has
the dock and split.
Yeah, I've just undocked it, and it's now like halfway up my screen, and that's really freaking me out.
Dock and split sounds like a Jamaican dance craze.
Yeah, but I knew about the splitting, but I didn't know you could undock it like that. So that's a new discovery for me.
You're undocking it like Jagger.
Yeah, I guess it's just so you can hold the iPad differently. You don't have to have your thumbs right at the bottom when you're typing. That's quite
neat. There you go. So hopefully that answers your question, Donald. Next one from Evil Homer.
That's not a real name.
Well, maybe, I don't know, maybe his parents.
At least we hope not. Something.
Roddy has just increased the font size in the notes, the show notes that say Trouble Gusset. from Evil Homer,
I'm just trying to foot Paul off now.
Change the colour as well. Yes, okay. Moving on.
Oh, dear. If I want to close all multitasking apps on my iPhone, do I need to close each one separately?
The short answer is yes.
Right.
The long answer is you don't need to.
Right. Mm. There's a misconception here. I overheard it, or my understanding is it's a misconception that having all these apps sitting open in multitasking actually drains your battery.
Which is rubbish, because they're in a stored state anyway. So if it's not in the foreground and it's not something that's actively tied in to doing something in the background like Spotify or an audio app, then it's not.
Or using GPS. Apps that use battery services can suck your battery. That's absolutely true. So if you don't want something like Spotify draining your battery, then do kill that when it's in the background. Or if you don't want, I'm trying to think what the one that used to kill my battery was. There was one of the location services apps that I was using was always draining my battery and always using GPS in the background, and it was very frustrating. But just having an app running in the background, it's not actually running if you're not using it. The only times you should really be killing an app is if it's doing something and you don't want it to do that thing for a time, like it's using GPS or background audio, and you don't want to do that, you can kill that if you really want to. But it's just as easy to switch off the permission for it in settings. Or if something has crashed and is misbehaving, then kill it then. But there shouldn't really be any other times that you really need to kill an app, because, yeah, they take up memory, but iOS is very good at managing memory. It's not like macOS or Windows where it runs out of memory and then it doesn't know what to do.
Or maybe other competing mobile operating systems.
Android, for example.
For example.
Or WebOS.
Like that. WebOS, yeah. Gee.
But WebOS handled it in a pretty nice way, if I'm not mistaken. It just says that, no, you can't open more cards now, and, well, that's that. Please toss away some more cards.
That's very polite of it.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
But yeah, this whole multitasking thing on iOS in general is kind of... it's a huge misconception about it. I mean, I remember reading or hearing about geniuses, the Genius Bar, suggesting to people that, just kill all your apps and it'll be fine. Which is, like you said,
nonsense.
Rubbish.
Bobbins. Yeah. Who's the genius now, eh?
So hopefully that answers your question, that it isn't actually necessary.
And if you really want to close all your apps, then you can always reboot the phone. That's probably the quickest way to do it, to be honest.
Okay, so rebooting it.
Yep.
Note that the if you double tap your home button, what you see in that dock that pops up is not the running apps. It's just the order in which you've used the apps most recently.
Yeah.
So they may or may not be running. There's no information as to whether or not they're doing anything just by looking at those icons.
Very, very good point. The next one, how do I get my iPhone to auto-download your fine podcast? That's from Stephen White. So thank you, Stephen, for the compliment. And the answer to the question, gentlemen, do we have an answer?
This has maybe changed since the question came in, because, of course, podcasts were part of iTunes before, and you go into the iTunes on your iPhone and go to the podcast, or iPodcast, as they should be called for purposes of consistency, if nothing else, and you then search for, you know, iOS show, and you go, wow, what a great show. Look at all the amazing reviews it gets from our devoted fans. But of course, since then, was it just over the last week or so, Apple have out of nowhere released a podcast dedicated app for iOS. So that's available in the App Store.
Which you'll notice we cleverly covered in the news section.
Yeah. Oh,
well, we didn't. We didn't actually cover that in the news section.
Oh, darn. We were going to.
It was in the notes.
Going to until we did.
We ran out of time because we flapped on too much about Nexus 7 and Nexus Q.
And gusset.
Well, let's carry on.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. But I think the question is, how do you auto-download? And the way you suggested by going in the iTunes app before the podcast app had come out wasn't auto-downloading it. And certainly, the way I'm reading his message is that I can download them. That's fine. But how do I have it automatically appearing whenever?
So he just wants an actual subscription that reacts to a new one coming up and downloads it, so it's there and pops up and goes, "Hello."
Exactly. Now,
in our voices.
I believe. I don't know this, and I should have actually tested this before we did the podcast, but I believe the new podcasting app does actually do that. But I know without a shadow of a doubt what does it better, and definitely achieves what you're looking for and does it substantially better, is, my goodness, Streaks baby is a machine, literally. he's off again.
Is he off on bummy duty again?
Yes, he's off on wrist-deep duties again. it's Downcast. Downcast, you can get in the iTunes App Store. It's absolutely superb podcatcher. I use it every single day, and basically all that happens is you just have to open the app every day, which I generally do anyway because I am listening to podcasts on my way to work and whatnot. And detects if there's any new apps out there, and it downloads them, and everybody's happy. So it's £1.49 in the UK App Store, and I think this does exactly what you're looking for. And does it?
And for those of you who are sickened by Paul, who is on commission from Downcast, you can. I'm just doing it now. You can do it in the new podcast app.
Can you? Right. Okay.
From Apple, who are lovely, and I've just typed in iOS into search, and just below the Today in iOS podcast, who are our podcast enemies, you'll see British Tech Networks, the iOS show, and there's a big subscribe button, and just press that, and it just does some stuff.
Cool. That's
problem
great.
Solved.
Yep. So there you go.
I'd also just like to, as well as Downcast, there's another well-known podcast downloading app called Instacast, which I've used for the last few months, and does a very similar thing. Very good.
cool. So there's three options for you. One is free, two are paid, but the two paid ones, as far as I understand it, albeit I've never used Instacast, but I believe it does much of the same thing as Downcast. They actually do it better and in a nicer fashion, a nicer interface, but you can get it for free in the Apple Podcast app. And finally, this one is from Roddy's parents. Their iPhone is in restore mode, error 1603. Roddy, do you want to give us a bit more detail about this? And quickly, because we are rapidly running out of time.
Oh, I'll do it so quick, you'll hardly notice it. My folks have an iPhone, original iPhone, which has been handed down and it popped up out of nowhere, the Kinect iTunes logo, where it's got a little cable, a little iTunes thing, and it will not do anything. I've tried restoring it, and it does not work. And the only time I've managed to fix it is by going into, on the computer you've got it plugged into, and I'm going to assume that you're using a Mac here, otherwise I can't tell you what to do. I went into, under my account, I went into Library, and then iTunes. I'm looking now because I should have researched this first. Gone into iTunes, and that's the wrong bit. No, it's in the master library. It's under iTunes, and it's got a hidden downloads bit. And if you've got the firmware in there, the IPSW file for the version of iOS you're trying to restore to, delete that, try and do a restore again. iTunes will download a fresh copy, and it should restore okay.
Superb. Are you able to put those steps in the show notes for us, just to pop them at the bottom of the document?
Yeah, and in fact, I've just noticed I typed in the wrong thing, so sorry, it is in your user folder under Library, iTunes, iPhone Software Updates.
Cool.
And okay. I'll put that in. Yep.
Great. Thank you very much. This podcast and all the others wouldn't be possible without UK2.net. And as mentioned before, because MobileMe is closing and iWeb is closing, or has closed, I should say, you can use Don McAllister's fine screencast, online screencast, to learn how you can move your iWeb across to UK2 hosting. If you want to do that, simply go over to Screencast Online, get the video over there, head over to thebritishtechnetwork.com, and on the left-hand side, you will find a link. That link will be able to that link will take you to UK2, so down the left hand side of the page, UK2.net. Fill your basket with everything you need that Don McAllister helps you with. Then you will be able to pop in the checkout page, you'll be able to see British Tech DNS, so type that in for your voucher code, it gives you free DNS for 2 years. British Tech Domains gives you 20% off domain name registration. British Tech VPN gives you 50% off your first month's VPN charges. British Tech Server gives you £50 off any gigabit server, that's on any contract length that's online, you can't ring up for that one. British Tech VPS gives you your first month free with a VPS server. So if you go over to UK2.net, also if you're logging into your account, I would very much appreciate if you go over at britishtechnetwork.com and click through there as well, just to reinforce people that we are sending that traffic there. If you didn't manage to catch any of those voucher codes, if you head over to britishtechnetwork.com and click on the sponsors link at the top, all the voucher codes are actually in there, so you can make a note of them in there. UK2, they support British Tech, and you should support them, so please do. Finally, and very quickly, because as I've said, we have breached time quite dramatically tonight, just with all of our loving of Android devices. I'd like to go in our picks. Robert, mm-hmm. Are you back?
That's a no, isn't it?
Assuming he's not back with us. Ian, we'll go with you first. What's your pick,
okay,
tonight, sir?
My pick is a nice, simple one. We've already talked about it this evening. It's Google Chrome for iOS.
That's iOS, you mean?
Sorry.
I don't want to...
No, yes,
I've been over this.
Yes, iOS. Google Chrome for iOS. I just can't get that in my head. It's free. It's on the App Store right now. If Apple feel a bit arsey, they might pull it. So, yes. It's worth trying out. It's quite a good alternative to Safari, as we said earlier. So definitely check it out, see what you think, and let us know your comments.
Yes, I thoroughly enjoy Google Chrome for iOS. I would support that. I'm actually, as I said before, I'm going to use it as my default browser for a week or so. And
well,
see
let
how
us
get
know
on.
How that works out for you, Paul.
I will do. Roddy, well, what do you do. Have?
Do you mean as a pick?
Yes. Have you? Did you manage to finish your double decker?
No, I'm waiting for the moment.
Oh, sorry, I've maybe ruined
it. Shall I do it while I'm doing my pick? It's a bit late now because I've got a bit of double decker in my mouth, but my one is Things Beta. which now Things is a task management app, but oh, she's delicious. It's been going for quite a while. It was an early App Store app. It's by Cultured Code, who are a very nice company who've built a great task management app. It is very well put together, and I loved it. But the one thing it was missing, despite having a despite having an iOS version and a macOS app sold separately, unfortunately, as is the iPad app, so it's an expensive hobby. I was delighted with it, but no cloud sync at all. So your tasks on all of your different devices were out of sync unless you actually physically plugged things in. Now, what they've done recently, it's still in beta. It took them forever, but they have now got a cloud beta version out. I'm trying it and it's brilliant. It's got all the wonderful task management capability of Things, but it properly syncs. And even though it's in beta, I've not had a single problem yet. I had moved to Wunderlist for a while, having got frustrated with the lack of cloud and Things. But Wunderlist, while it does sync, is just a pain. I never liked it. So it's worth trying if you've maybe forsaken Things on the basis of that. Go and give the beta a try for fun and profit.
As it happens, I have forsaken Things on the basis of lack of cloud syncing.
Well, maybe you should try the Things beta, like I've just said.
Maybe.
I'm going to have the rest of my double-decker now. Okay. I don't care what anyone says.
While you're eating the rest of your double-decker, and it should be noted that no longer can anybody win the competition for when Roddy ate the double-decker, because he has quite openly told us when he's eating
it. Yeah, I'm eating it now.
So there you go. Anyway, Robert.
So much for that competition.
Robert, what have you got? Excuse me, I'll put my teeth in. What have you got for us this evening, sir?
I have a small app known as Dropbox, and that's not to be confused with Dropbox. This is Dropbox. Hmm. So it's, of course, connects to Dropbox.
See, I just thought you were typing with a Scandinavian accent.
I was trying to, but I suck at doing it. So, yeah, you know, being a native Scandinavian, I'm kind of embarrassed with myself right now. Dropbox, then. It's a very simple little voice recording app. That automatically, more or less, at least, as long as you have an internet connection, uploads whatever it is you record straight to a specifically dedicated folder in your Dropbox. So Dropbox account necessary. It's also the way I do my other little one-man podcast because, well, I can't really be bothered with anything more complicated. So anywhere I'm out in the world, I just start up Dropbox and do my thing, say whatever I want to feel like saying, and that's it. And it just, as soon as I'm connected to the internet, uploads, and poo. When I'm back at my computer, I just have the file. It's there to be edited.
I think we've had enough poo from you this evening.
You have no idea what I've been touching.
Oh.
Sorry, moving back on to your pick for a second. Sorry to disturb that. So does this have any kind of limit so you can record, in theory, as much as the memory you have available in your iOS device?
I think so. I haven't really been able to bump into any hard limits they've managed to like build into the app. Mm-hmm. I've been talking for like 15 minutes and it hasn't really given any warnings or anything. And this is on the iPhone 3G, which has very small RAM compared to the newer devices. So,
Okay.
So I haven't found anything like that. And you can choose if like between different file formats, but it's not like uncompressed WAV or anything like that. But I think it's like AACC or something. So it's pretty good quality, all things considered.
Very good. And sorry, was that free?
No, sadly, this is a tier 2 paid app.
So about £1.50 or something, is it?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Cool. $2 in the US store anyway, so it's not the most expensive app in the world.
Yeah. Okie dokie. Finally, my pick is an app called Where's My Perry? I don't know, those of you with maybe 5 to 10-year-old children may have heard of the cartoon show Phineas and Ferb.
Is that 5 to 10 children, like different children, like having 7 or 8 children? Or is this an age range?
I would imagine it's an age range. It's kind of on the Disney Channel. I actually quite enjoy the TV show myself.
My kids watch that, actually. Okay, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, this is an iPad and iPhone app that basically you have to save Perry, the platypus. He is stuck in a little chamber, and you have to have water flowing in different places to fill up a cup. And for some reason, when the amount of water fills up this little chamber underneath Perry, it releases a trapdoor which allows him to escape from the pod. It's quite a fun little puzzler game. It's a little bit different. I really, really enjoy it. It's currently 69 pence on the iTunes App Store. As in the iTunes App Store for the iPad. Yeah. And iPhone versions. It's one version for both devices, so it's designed for both iPhone and iPad. It's a great little puzzler. I absolutely love it for my train ride to work and back in the morning. So that's Where's My Perry. I'll put the link in the show notes for that.
I notice it describes itself as a challenging physics-based puzzler for 69 pence, where alternatively you could buy a Tetra Pak carton of milk for 69 pence, which in its own way is a challenging physics-based puzzler just trying to get the bloody thing open.
I would say that has a higher risk reward as well.
And I dare say there's no little pod to open its flaps beneath you.
Well, actually, there would be on a milk carton, wouldn't there? Or are you referring to
the
milk
cartons carton? Beneath it? I think what you do with milk cartons is very strange indeed. Also, I'd note that saving Perry, I thought from my impression of the show, was that he was quite capable of saving himself. So it seems a little bit incongruous from the general theme of Phineas and Ferb.
That is a fair point, actually, yes.
Yeah.
I was very confused when I saw the title of this, because as far as I knew, Perry was an alcoholic beverage made from fermented pears. So I was like a camera app. You know, you can go to the pubs that have the best Perry on tap.
What's it's like Find My Pims.
Yeah, I'd buy that.
Where's my monocle?
Very good, very good. Okay, all that's left for us to do is to thank everybody for listening. If you want to send us in anything for support stockings or trouble gusset, please feel free to email us britishtechnews@gmail.com, or you can tweet directly to the network British Tech News on Twitter. You can get a hold of me either to send me, general abuse, or whether you can send me stuff in one line in 140 characters for support stockings. I'm at Paul Wheatley on Twitter. Roddy, where can they get you?
I'm on the internet. My Twitter account is RODTI, and come and chat. Let's have fun. Stranger.
Robert, where can they find you?
I am also available on the Twitters, that would be at Streak Machine, and I might not be there as often, so leave me a message if you feel like it.
And finally, Ian, where can they get hold of you?
I'm also on the Twitters, and you can find me at Maniac Yak, which is MANIACYAK.
Superb. And finally, if you can, we would really, really appreciate it if you could give us some reviews in iTunes. Really helps our ratings. If you happen to be listening this in either Canada or America, I notice we have no ratings in there, so I would really, really appreciate any reviews you can give us over there. So much appreciated. Now, this show is going out a little bit earlier than usual, so we're planning on having this out tomorrow night, which is Wednesday. I normally release it on a Sunday. The reason for that is because there's a British Tech Bash on Friday, and we will be doing a live version of the show at the British Tech Bash, which will be predominantly a support stocking / trouble gusset section, due to the fact we'll be following immediately behind the Mac show, so probably most news stories will be covered in there. So if you want to tune in to the British Tech Network Bash, it will be on all day on Friday. That's Friday the 6th of July, and we are currently planned to be on at 5 o'clock, but things may overrun, so there'll be an iOS show support stocking special 5 o'clock on UK time on Friday. That's everything. I think we're done for this evening. Thank you very much, gentlemen, and we'll see you on Friday. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Paul.
Cheers.
Bye.
Awesome.